Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Well, we have a chance now to meet the tennis great, Monica Seles. As some of you remember, she was the number one player on the women's circuit when she was not yet a woman, rising to the top at the age of 16 back in 1990. And her career was permanently altered in 1993 when she was actually stabbed on the court during a major tournament by a deranged fan of her rival, Steffi Graf. Now, Seles may have been equally well known for this, the sound of a Monica Seles point. That's Monica Seles' famous loud grunt through a pretty long rally there when striking the tennis ball. And opponents like Graf and Martina Navratilova managed to turn it to their advantage ultimately. Seles eventually came back, if you don't know the story, from the stabbing. And her tennis career actually lasted until 2003 on the court. She just officially retired from the circuit last year. And now Monica Seles has a memoir called Getting a Grip on My Body, My Mind, Myself. It is my pleasure to welcome Monica Seles to WNYC. Hello.
Hi, Brian. Thanks so much for having me on your show. So excited to be here today.
Did you win that point?
Probably. I hope so, at least.
Chances are, given your career, that you won the point. Yeah. You know, and I really want to ask you first about the grunt, because personally, I was a fan of your grunting. Were you trained to do that as a kid?
No, not at all, Brian. I mean, I started playing tennis when I was a little girl at age 6, and I grunted pretty much from day one because I was very tiny. I was always on the smaller side, and I put every single ounce of my energy into that ball. So I grunted from my junior tournaments, and really even in professional tennis, way before any of the other players started complaining about it. The only difference was that by that point, I was number one in the world.
And I had forgotten, because I hadn't heard it in so long until we played that clip, the grunt was 2 syllables.
Well, I didn't even notice that I was grunting, but at the Wimbledon tennis tournament down in London, England, they actually brought out a gruntometer. Although I wish I could take credit for being the first person to grunt in a tennis match, but unfortunately Jimmy Connors started doing it before I was even born.
Absolutely right, and nobody gave him a hard time. You know, I have a friend who considers himself a Zen baseball coach. He calls himself. And he actually trains hitters, especially mild-mannered ones, to grunt when they swing the bat as if they're doing a martial arts move, like, ha, when you connect with the ball for more power and authority. So you could probably relate to that.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, in my case, it really was just something natural. I've never thought about doing it, not doing it, besides one match, which was Wimbledon, you know, when they wanted to fine me for grunting, etc. And for me, it was just the way I play tennis. It's my individuality. And, you know, thanks to my father, he always said, be an individual. And, you know, that was kind of my trademark throughout my tennis career.
And you tell the story in the book about how you did it for years and years. But then in some big matches, your opponents like Steffi Graf and Martina started to complain to the referees, who actually made you tone it down. Was there a rule?
No, there was no rule. And, you know, I played Wimbledon many years beforehand and other Grand Slams, and nobody complained. Those same players I played a few weeks before and didn't complain. But unfortunately, I was playing such good tennis that they just had to find any single thing to, I think, try to rattle my mental concentration. And unfortunately, they succeeded, but thankfully only for that single tournament.
And you're right that toning down the grunts was one of the few things you ever regretted in your life. That's quite
correct,
a thing.
Correct, right, yes. Yeah, unfortunately, you know, I was 17 years old, and I was like, oh, I want to make sure everybody likes me. And then once I realized that, you know, you got to be an individual, whatever it is, whatever makes you win that point. And for me, it was part of my game, and this is who I was. And, you know, some people liked it, some didn't, but I wasn't out there to please people. I was out there to win tennis tournaments.
Tennis great Monica Seles, my guest on WNYC, her new memoir, Getting a Grip. The stabbing, you were 20?
I was actually 19 years old when I got stabbed. I was playing on the tennis court over in Germany, and I was doing a changeover when a fan of my rival decided out of the blue to stab me. And, you know, I look back as one of the most difficult times in my life.
You say your rival. It wasn't the player.
No, a fan of hers. A fan of hers, yes. You know, I took away 2.5 years from the sport before I decided to come back. Unfortunately, my time away, I put on 20 pounds too. So when I came back, I was a different person and a different player because of it. So it definitely had a huge impact on my game, but also on my life.
Was it harder to come back to tennis physically or emotionally?
I think a combination of really both. You know, I was at the top of my game when that happened. Physically, it injured me for quite some time. Then mentally also too. So, you know, I tried to do my best, and I realized at the end of the day that I love to play tennis, and I shouldn't let anybody else take that away from me. And really one of the most things that I'm so proud that I ended up coming back at age 21 and won a Grand Slam and really still had a wonderful tennis career.
Did you heal physically before you healed emotionally? Did you come back to tennis as soon as you were physically ready, or did it take you extra time?
It took me extra time. I mean, physically probably would have been about 9 months to just heal from the injury, then let alone you got to practice too, because being number one in the world, I just can't wave a magic wand and say, oh, I want to be number one. You got to practice there, because as I've learned, every other player wanted that spot. So, and besides that, obviously I had to deal with a lot of emotional aspects of my stabbing, coming back from it, and, you know, playing again tennis under those circumstances.
And you wrote about the training regimen of a pro tennis player and how you got deconditioned after the attack because you couldn't work out. You said even 1 week of being off the regimen would put you at a disadvantage in normal times.
Yes, definitely. And you know, the truth be told, that, you know, when I got stabbed in a women's tennis career, those are your key years, because in women's tennis, youth is rewarded by, and you know, I was a perfect example of that, and a lot of other top players.
How young were you when you started training so intensely?
I really realized that tennis actually could be something that I was super good at, or maybe making it a career when I was 13 years old, because that's when I started beating all players who were a lot older than me and even some professionals. And then at age 15 is when I did decide to turn professional.
Did it rob you of the end of your childhood, or give you a special, wonderful childhood, or even before 13, where you talk about your dad. Your dad was your mentor and your tennis coach for so long. Was he driving you to be number one at tennis when you were 6 and 7 and 8?
Oh, not at all. I mean, I've really got a great parents, both my mom and my dad and my brother. I really was very lucky there. And my dad was a cartoonist, so he always brought some fantastic humor to the game. And no, not at all. I was very lucky. But, you know, once I think he realized and I realized that at a certain age, you have an extraordinary talented person, I was very driven the same way I'm still driven about whatever I do. And we decided to move to the U.S. and come here and train because all the tournaments were here. Then, you know, my life took a different turn. And I think any of us that have achieved things, you do have to sacrifice. There's no question I had to sacrifice part of my childhood, leave my home, leave my friends, and come to a new country where I, you know, just spoke English a bit and really make a new home here. And that was all because the love of my tennis and my family took a huge risk. But I think at the end of the day, if you love what you do and you're passionate about it, then I think it's all worth it.
Where did you grow up?
I grew up in the former Yugoslavia.
That was in the last years before communism collapsed in Eastern Europe. What was it like there?
Great memory. Well, luckily, Yugoslavia was, I don't know, socialist. So, you know, we didn't have any of those restrictions. So really, my childhood was wonderful. We didn't have the hardship that some of our neighboring countries had. So we were very lucky. And, you know, that was maybe one of the reasons why, unfortunately, it was very difficult to leave at that time when I did. But also, I lived in Italy and Germany beforehand because of my father's work. So I really left, you know, at a much earlier age.
I see. So this is not the kind of thing that people probably ask you about, but you were becoming the top woman tennis player in the world at 16, just as communism was falling in your country and in the whole region, 1989, 1990. Were you aware of it at the time? Was it a big thing for you? Was it a topic of discussion in your family?
Yeah, definitely more so for my parents. I mean, I was 10 years old when I left. And, you know, at 10 years old, I didn't sit at the kitchen table talking with my parents' politics. And really, where I came from at that point, it was a very open country. I mean, we could travel. We had, you know, all the things that you wanted to. So I never felt that as a kid growing up. So for me, so much wasn't. But I did realize once I came on the tour, you know, you had few players at that point from old Russia, you know, where they had these chaperones. And, you know, I've asked my father what that was about, and you know, he explained to me, and then but I was still, I think, too young to understand.
And the Balkan Wars in the 90s, were they personal for you as someone from Yugoslavia?
That was a very difficult period, I think, for a lot of people. It's you know, it's heartbreaking what happened there. But by that point, you know, I've lived in the U.S. for a long time and became eventual and naturalized American citizen.
Are there steroids in tennis?
Oh, I don't know. In my case, you know, I've never taken a single supplement in my life. And I talk about that in my book, that I really wanted to do everything naturally, same way I wanted to lose my weight naturally. And I achieved that. And that's what I talk about in my book, getting a grip, that I didn't want to be dependent on a diet or on a supplement. I wanted to do it the natural, organic way. And that's one of the great things I'm so proud of, that now for about 5.5 years, I've lost 37 pounds and have been able to maintain it.
Do you think others are using or have used performance-enhancing drugs of any type? Would there any be any reason that tennis is immune if it's going on in all these other sports?
I really, you know, don't know. I mean, as a tennis player, I had my own little cocoon around me, my trainer and my coach. And that was it. You know, tennis is not a buddy-buddy sport. I really never hung out with any other player, so I really don't know. I just worried about what I was doing because I was under so much pressure and I was battling my own demons, you know, which I mentioned in my book, my addiction to food. So I had so many other issues going on in my life that, you know, I couldn't get a grip on, that I couldn't worry about the outside stuff.
Former tennis great Monica Seles, my guest on WNYC. Her new memoir is called Getting a Grip, and a good portion of the book is about overeating to compensate for trauma. Did that start with the attack?
Oh, definitely. I think my overeating, I've never had a problem till after my stabbing. And that, as I mentioned, that I had came back 20 pounds heavier. And at the same time, my father's illness, which eventually he passed away from stomach cancer, also contributed tremendously to it. So it's all these very difficult periods in my life where I turned to food and food became my best friend. Food was there wherever I played at the U.S. Open, or if I played at the French Open, or if I was just in Oklahoma. And unfortunately for my career, it was one of the worst habits that I could have developed because I came back heavier. I was a lot less mobile on the court. Depressed didn't let me forget about it. So it became a huge emotional crutch, I guess, on my psyche.
Is there a lesson from your experience for other people who overeat for comfort?
Well, I sure hope so. I mean, that's really one of the main reasons why I decided the book, because, you know, I've been out of the public eye for quite some time after I retired from playing tennis, and I decided to take on a new challenge, Dancing with the Stars. And a lot of people didn't see me. And obviously, after Dancing with the Stars, the number one comment I got, oh, my God, you look so much better. You lost so much weight. We all thought you would be huge after you stopped playing tennis. And then, obviously, the second question, what's the secret, what diet, et cetera, you were on. And everybody was surprised when I told them, this is not a diet. This is a lifestyle choice that you decide to make. I had enough of diets. I read every single diet book out there in the market. I could have written half of them myself. The same way I was so tired of the yo-yo diets. I lost the weight. I gained the weight. And not just the effects that all those had on my body, but as an athlete is my vehicle. That's how I, you know, I played. But also emotionally, they were just so hard for me to deal with that. The simple thing, like food, I couldn't control. Yet when I stepped out there on the tennis court, I was so in control. So for me, it took a while to understand that, and the irony in my story is that I started losing my weight after I stopped playing tennis and working out at such a crazy pace.
What do you do now? Is dancing your main thing?
I haven't danced since the day I lost on that show because I realized that I was a terrible dancer, a it's not something that I really enjoyed, even though I'm a huge fan of the show and my mom and I love to watch it. It's like kind of our activity together. So for me, the secret is walking. I love to walk. I try to walk every day an hour wherever I am, no matter what part of the world. And I think watching my diet, but allowing myself to eat all foods that I want to eat, but in moderation. But to be able to do that, you first got to get a handle on your emotions and what's eating you, because all of us that have been overweight, we know it's not food what's eating us, but it's our emotions.
Monica Seles, now retired from tennis and I guess from Dancing with the Stars, and her new memoir is called Getting a Grip. Thank you so much for visiting with us.
Thanks so much, Brian.